Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I share my experiences about filming an upcoming episode of 2020 on fat activism in Aotearoa, New Zealand. I also chat with Hannah Ockleford, the reporter with 2020, who was part of the team who crafted the story. This Thursday, February 16th of 2012, TV2 in New Zealand will be airing an episode of 2020 that explores the world of fat activism in New Zealand, and yours truly will be a big, fat part of the story. If memory serves, I approached Louisa, the producer, about doing the show. I wanted a program like 2020 or Sunday to introduce New Zealand to the growing social movement that is fat liberation. I provided a list of names of both fat studies scholars and fat activists around the country and met with the producer to chat about what kind of story it could be. My intention was to play the role of the academic, commenting on the rise of fat activism and sitting comfortably to the side of the story as an expert. The producer, however, saw me as a bigger part of the story. I struggled with the decision because being in the spotlight is not a place I want to be. I like to organize things, produce things, coordinate things. I am really, really, really good at pulling things together and running things from behind the scene. I remember a time when I was younger when I wanted that spotlight focused on me. Not really sure when that changed, but the idea of being a major part of a story on 2020 was not my idea of a good time. As we emailed back and forth, however, it became clear that if I wasn't willing to play a key role, there probably wouldn't be a story at all. This is often the price for being involved in a small movement like Fat Liberation. There are only a handful of people in New Zealand who would identify as fat activists, and an even smaller number who are willing to put themselves out there in the public with such an identity. But if we want our message to reach more people, that fat people deserve the same rights and dignity as non-fat people, we need publicity. And that means making ourselves the public face of a political movement that is also very personal. Putting yourself out there as a visible fat activist has both benefits. It increases increasing my reputation as a fat studies researcher is good for my career. And I really love the emails I receive from others who find their own courage and strength from seeing people like me standing tall. And it also has costs. Being a proud fat activist paints a target for both hate and concern trolls indeed, and on such a large surface at that. So I agreed, and the 2020 crew shot a variety of footage across 3 days. First up was the classic 2020 interview with me against a backdrop. I expected the first question to be something along the lines of, what is fat activism? So I was quite surprised when the first question was about the necklace I was wearing, one of my many fat necklaces from Fancy Lady Industries. I was so surprised, in fact, that instead of identifying it as something from Fancy Lady Industries, I panicked, and I wasn't sure if definitely is pronounced definitely or definitely. And I'm pretty sure I went with the second one. My apologies to Natalie. I fumbled my responses, and I forgot all of the succinct one-liners I regularly use when I do interviews. The reporter, Hannah Ockleford, asked me questions, insightful questions, about fat activism and the work that I do. She also asked about what I eat and whether I exercise. When we spoke about it afterwards, she explained that many people watching will be asking those questions and that it's better for her to do as well. I responded by asking whether she asked those same questions of everyone she interviews on the subjects of weight, obesity, or health. We shot at my office, me talking about tools for fat activism and living life as a fat person. We shot walking through the square, me talking about fat phobia. We shot at the Access Manawatu studio, me recording my weekly radio show, Friend of Maryland. Huge shout out, by the way, to Kath Reed for being the last minute guest for the taping. We shot me preparing food for a dinner with friends and then part of the dinner itself. Thanks for that, friends. They also convinced me to do an impromptu fashion show, which I really hope meets the cutting room floor. One of the larger parts of the filming involved me giving my presentation on the obesity myths, big fat facts, what you don't know about what isn't killing you, to a group of women they recruited. Most of these women are actively involved in weight loss, and I spoke with the producer about my concerns. Do I, as a professional, have an ethics of care consideration to make? If part of my presentation is educating on the futility of weight loss, and these women are committed to losing weight, what ethical responsibilities arise? I've actually decided to write a separate blog post about that later. In the end, we went ahead with that presentation, and unsurprisingly, the women in the group who had recently lost weight and were working to lose more were happy to dismiss my science as wrong. Committed to what Kate Harding calls the fantasy of being thin, The women in attendance were willing to consider some of the other myths, but not interested in acknowledging the failure rates of diets, even when you call them lifestyle changes. The last thing we shot was a yay scale demonstration on Queen Street in Auckland. This is my first time doing this kind of activism, and it was intimidating. But it was a great experience, and I'm sure the footage we shot was some of the best of the bunch. From the 8-year-old boy who shared that he had to be weighed weekly at school before he was allowed to play rugby, to the women who stepped on the scale and watched in delight and shock as they were declared by the scale to be sexy, cute, hot, and beautiful, it was all very meaningful to me. Will the story be meaningful to those who choose to watch? Now that the filming is over, I can obsess over my fear and excitement regarding the show and the way it will be received by the New Zealand public. What I would like to do is watch it before anyone else. I like to process my feelings before I have to deal with how other people feel, but seeing the episode early is not an option. My backup scenario is to watch it in private and then hide out for a few days. But my friends want to watch it with me. So now I'm thinking I may just jump off the cliff without a parachute. I'll hold a viewing party. Invite everyone I know over and just embrace the embarrassment I know I'm going to feel at seeing myself and hearing myself on TV. And cringing I will engage in as I misspeak or when I am less than eloquent. I make mistakes. I am not perfect. And I'm working on being okay with that. Perhaps we'll play a drinking game. Break out the shot glasses, everyone. Every time someone says the word fat, take a shot. We'll all be drunk before the first commercial break. And then, of course, will be the comments posted and emails sent. Some will be positive, but most will be negative. I say this because we live in a fatphobic world. I say this because people often confuse their hate for concern. I say this because I've been doing media about fat liberation for a few years, and I always get more bad feedback than good. This time, I'm more prepared. I've dealt with much of it before, and I have a larger connection with the fatosphere, so I don't have to process this alone. I have also printed out fat hate bingo cards and plan to see how long it takes me to get a bingo. Will I reach a bingo on the first day? The first 5 emails? Maybe I'll share the game on Tumblr and you can join me in the fun. Anyone want to play with me? Send me an email and I'll send you a card. friendofmarilyn@aol.com. Doing the story with 2020 has been a learning experience for me, both as a fat activist and as an individual who consumes a great deal of media. The structured nature of the shoot, including the stage shots and different angles, added depth to my understanding of how a show like 2020 gets put together. I'm worried about the end product, I'll not try to deny that. The 2020 team has been trying to put my worries to ease for months, assuring me that they want to simply share the message of fat activism with the public, promising that they're not trying to make me look foolish. But what else would they say as we're working together? Yes, we want to make you look like an ass, a big fat ass. Of course not. So I put my faith into them, and I hope that I have represented myself and the fat liberation movement well. Hopefully I can post the clip on YouTube, and you can watch it for yourself. Feel free to let me know what you think. Joining me today is Hannah Ockleford, a reporter with 2020, who was part of the team who crafted the story on fat activism in New Zealand. Hannah, thank you so much for coming on Friend of Marilyn.
Thank you for having me, Kat. It's a great opportunity. And actually, more importantly, I think I should be thanking you for coming on our show because it's been such a fabulous experience. And I think so important to have someone like you, you know, talking publicly.
Well, I have to admit, I enjoyed it a lot more than I expected to. But I am still nervous. So the nerves won't go away until after I see it. But why did you guys decide to do a story about this in the first place?
Well, Kat, you'll know this, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners will know this, that we have so many fat or obese, you know, type stories in the media, but they all come from the assumption that fat is bad or that fat is correlated with health. And so I guess this is kind of a new and challenging, or the place that you come from is new and challenging to people, and it's topical. You know, I think the other thing is that 2020 is able to cover this in a really different way than lots of the other media. Mm. Like 2020 comes from a point of view of, you know, this is your story, this is your chance to speak, and unlike other sort of other formats, we don't have to put the skeptic on board. So, you know, like if you were covering this story on Sunday, our other current affairs show, we'd be looking for someone else to perhaps counter some of your opinions or challenge some of the things that you were saying. But on 2020, it's about a raw, untouched view and an insight into, I guess, your opinions and your life.
Yeah. Well, like you said, I mean, it's definitely a very different kind of story about fatness than what we normally see. And we normally see a lot of other kinds of stories about fatness as well. So Yeah.
absolutely. I mean, right from the beginning, everything is challenging. I mean, you know, when anyone thinks about being fat, we come from that assumption because we've been told that fat is bad. Now, you know, we automatically believe what all the health professionals say about the stats, but in fact, you bring a whole lot of other stats in that, you know, and other facts in that I think challenge those mainstream assumptions.
So what do you hope the people who are going to watch this episode, what do you hope they take away from it?
Mostly around, I hope it challenges their beliefs, and I hope it makes people think.
Right.
Yeah.
Make them think.
I really hope it makes people think, because it certainly made us think, and I know, like, in our edit process and, you know, with our producers watching it, you know, we had to really justify what we'd said. You know, I think my first line that I wrote in the story is, in a fatphobic world, this is truly an act of rebellion, and we're looking at pictures of you in the yay scale. And, you know, as a journalist, am I making an assumption saying that we live in a fatphobic world? Am I stating that as fact? Well, I argued when we were watching our story down that it would be very hard to argue that we didn't live in a fatphobic world.
Right, exactly.
Those kind of things, yeah. I guess the other thing I'd really hope is that people would look at their judgment around other people a bit more. I mean, one of the things that you said that has sat with me a lot is the only thing that you can tell about my fat body is how you think about fat bodies.
Yep.
And I think that's a really, really important message to take away. I have talked to a lot of my personal friends and while doing this story, and one of my friends is fat, and she said to me, and I've never heard her say this, is that she'll walk down the street and people will say, "You fat so and so," right to her face.
Oh yeah.
You know, that stuff surprised me, because I hope that I would never be that person who would do that. But the fact that a fat person would experience that, you know.
Well, and not share it. So, I mean, I think part of it,
well,
too, is that,
too, yeah,
like you said, this is a good friend of yours. And until you actually started kind of talking about these issues, she never actually shared with her that that's part of her, like, everyday life. And I think it's because of, like, the shame, you know, that we're supposed to feel, that society tells us, you know, well, you've brought this on yourself. And so if someone yells at you, "Hey, fatty," like, you deserve that. And so we don't share it with other people.
But it's all based on fear, isn't it, that stuff?
Oh,
you talk
I think
about
so, yeah.
The fear of being fat and how so much of society plays into that, like the weight loss industry and things like that. And I think perhaps it would be really good if people who were the ones saying to a fat person, you know, something derogatory, if they thought, well, actually, why am I doing that? I'm doing that because I'm afraid of being that person.
Yeah.
And then and the next step, I guess, is why am I afraid of that?
Yeah. Well, and even if you're not willing to kind of unpack it, which would be great if people would, but just to kind of take a step back and be like, you know, I don't really have any right to have or to share. Obviously, people have a right to have an opinion, but this sense of entitlement that people should be sharing their opinions with others without being asked, you know, so telling someone that they should be on a diet or commenting on what's in their cart at the supermarket, those kinds of things. If it's not your body, it's not your business. So, yeah.
Yeah,
those are hard things, though, to get across, but we'll see. So I had a good time filming. You know, there were parts,
I had a great time.
There were parts of it that I was, you know, not necessarily comfortable with. So like the impromptu, like, fashion show, especially, I felt just really silly
now,
doing
that. Now, I think
that.
You'll love that part of the story. I think you'll really love that part.
I've been hoping that met the cutting room floor.
we cut it to some fantastic music, and you are standing in front of the mirror admiring yourself in some of your favorite outfits.
Oh,
and honestly,
no.
It's a really fun part of the story.
Well, I'll take your word for it. And, but for the most part, it was a really positive experience with me.
Good.
And I'm curious as to, you know, what parts of the filming process did you find exciting or surprising?
Well, I mean, hands down, my favorite part was the yay scale.
Oh, mine too, yeah.
I mean, mostly because it was such a positive experience, and I didn't think that it would be going into it. First of all, I thought people are often off-put by the camera, right? So that's
yeah.
But when we put down the scales and people started reacting to them, it didn't matter that the camera was right there filming them. And the camera captures those moments where, I mean, you turn around to people and say, "Oh my God, you're sexy. When was the last time someone ever told you were sexy?"
Yeah.
And the look on these women's faces just is so gorgeous. It's so awesome. And you just wonder why we don't spend more time telling each other that we're fabulous and we're beautiful, you know, and you're beautiful because you're individual and because you're you.
Yeah. Well, and you and I've talked about, you know, kind of the language that women speak in terms of their bodies and other women's bodies and how it's often quite negative. And one of the challenges that I often give, like, to my friends, especially the ones that think I make a lot of this up or that, you know, I see things that I want to see, I challenge them to the next time they're in a group with their women friends to start talking about something they really like about their body and to try to get the other women around them to do the same thing.
And strangely, that's so uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable. It really is. And that says so much about the larger culture and, again, the language that women speak in relation to their bodies and to others.
We're really comfortable putting ourselves down. And
yes.
And I don't think, I mean, typically that's quite a New Zealand thing, but I don't think that is just a New Zealand thing.
No, definitely not.
Yep. It's not okay to stand up and go, oh, my curvy bum looks fantastic.
Right, yeah. I really like my knees, you know, like. So you know what the final product is. I won't know until tomorrow when it airs. But what do you think people might find challenging about this episode?
I think particularly challenging about this episode. I think, like, there's a bit where I ask you about the obesity epidemic, and you go, it's just a load of poppycock, really. And we do unpack that. But I think that people are going to have such ingrained beliefs around what they know the obesity epidemic to be and what they know fatness to be, like, for example, its association with diabetes and things like that.
Right.
That I think for people to actually reframe some of that or think twice about what they have been told as fact and what may or may not be fact will be the hardest part. Yeah.
What about in terms of fat activism? Because I guess you could say, in a way, like, fat activism isn't necessarily about trying to, like, re-educate people or get them to, you know, really look at the empirical data, because it's kind of, in a way, it's about, you know, fat people should have the same rights and dignity as non-fat regardless. So even if we were to accept that being fat is bad for you and, you know, the obesity epidemic is, like, the worst thing that's ever happened to any of us, even if we were to accept all of that, obviously there's still something to be said for that does not mean then that, you know, fat people should be discriminated against and all of these kinds of things.
Yeah.
So do you think people are going to have a struggle with just the overall message of fat activism?
Yeah, well, I think people, perhaps people who aren't fat will struggle with the idea that fat people do, you know, as are discriminated against.
Yeah.
I think people will struggle with that, yeah. I mean, what about the whole scales thing and, like, our ladies who you gave that that talk to and, you know, their relationship with the number on the scale? I mean, one of the things that they came out of that, out of your talk with was, or the main message they came out with was, I'm not going to hop on my scales every day, because I think you told them that, you know, so much of how we, you know, how we define ourselves can be based on that number on the scale. And that was, I think, something that really resonated with people, you know?
Yeah. Which is fantastic. I mean, if what people walk away with this from is, I'm going to get rid of the scale in my house, I think that would be a huge step in the right direction.
Actually, Kat, I don't think they went that far. I think they got to, I'm only going to weigh in once a week rather than every day.
Or multiple times a day. I mean,
every day. Isn't
In my dieting history, I used to weigh myself more than once a day. So, and I know lots of women that do that as well. So.
If you don't have that glass of water.
That's right. So the last thing that I just wanted to kind of get some feedback from you on, and I know that in our, like, the kind of classic interview part that we did, one of the things that I mentioned was that I felt that the media plays a role in stigmatizing fat people. And, you know, one of the examples I gave was what Charlotte Cooper calls the headless fatty phenomenon. So the idea that anytime there's a story about fat people, which it's almost always negative as well, but anytime there's a story, they show the fat person from without a head, you know, from the neck down or just the stomach. And I had suggested that that's an example of objectification. So when you show people as body parts instead of whole people, it's easier for us to dehumanize them. And if something's not human, then of course it's not difficult to discriminate and stigmatize and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm just curious, and now, you know, now that we're a few months down the line and you and I have been interacting quite a bit and talking about these kinds of things, what would you say is the role or the responsibility of the media in stigmatizing fat people?
Well, this is really interesting because I think this really challenged my beliefs as a journalist. Sorry, or what I thought I was doing right. So you're coming from the perspective that you've unpacked some of these ideas around fatness. You've come to terms with yourself and your body. And therefore, if someone films you on the street, you're not going to assume that your fat body is a negative thing.
Yeah. Right?
And when the media is talking about fatness, it's always in the context of something negative.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a sensitivity that the media, I think the media thinks, well, as journalists, we think we're being sensitive when we go out onto the street and film fat people and then don't identify them.
Right.
So we are coming from two different perspectives there. Now, if we, so you're saying it would be better to identify them because then you wouldn't objectify, and we're saying, well, in the context of this negative story, which it usually is, well, always is, that's fair to say, you know, by not identifying, we're actually being sensitive to the issue. It would be really interesting to identify people and see what the reaction then was, because although I think that you've got really sophisticated views and have spent a lot of time thinking about them and are quite active, you know, around this movement, I don't think that would be the case for everybody.
Yeah.
Rightly or wrongly. And so would it be fair then to assume that every other fat person is in the same positive place that you are? I'm not sure. But do we then somehow play into the whole stereotypes by continuing to do it? So, yeah, I think that is definitely, I mean, I think that's something that, you know, journalists should debate amongst themselves. I'm not sure I know the answer to that.
I guess I think for me, part of it is like there's even a larger thing going on, which you did identify. It's this idea that every time there's a story about fat people on the news, it's a negative story.
Mm.
And so the media thinks that they're being respectful by not actually showing a fat person, including their face, because then, oh, my God, so shameful, and they'll be so embarrassed.
Mm.
And so I guess I think part of the larger is if we look at fat people as a general population, the same way that we would look at gays and lesbians or Maori or poor people, and we're saying, okay, we have this entire population of people, and the only stories we do about them are negative kinds of stories, I would say that in itself is like the first problem that could be addressed.
Mm.
I do appreciate what you're saying in terms of kind of the larger scope of having other people, and I'm not really sure what the answer is to that. I know actually there's two researchers in Australia who are currently compiling a library of positive fat images.
Mm.
So they're doing it for the media. So they're actively, you know, recruiting images of fat people, including their faces, in all different kinds of, you know, the same kind of images that you would expect to have, like kind of stock images that most media have access to, except it's usually all, you know, non-fat people.
Mm.
And it's usually all like white people and attractive people as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So well, I know that they're actually really compiling that.
Because, I mean, when we go out to film those kind of images, where do we go? We go out into, I don't know, typically kind of a main street where there might be people eating along the street.
Right.
And you've got this kind of, you end up, this picture of a fat person kind of often eating, kind of, you know, the clothes might be tight, all those kind of things.
Yeah.
There's no positive association with it.
Yeah.
I think that's a really, that would be a really different place to come from, wouldn't it?
It just would,
about the way that we filmed them,
Rather
than maybe just the identification. It's also about the way that we film them.
Well, and again, kind of that larger context. So, you know, if you go to McDonald's and, you know, you're specifically filming a fat person eating a Big Mac, but, you know, not showing their face, more than likely sitting next to them or across the way from them is a non-fat person eating a Big Mac as well.
Exactly.
So, you know, I think that one of the larger things that I know I try to work for, and I know that you guys probably have included in the story, is this idea that if we want to talk about health, great, let's talk about health. Let's quit, you know, focusing on weight, which I would say doesn't have a big relationship to it. So if the problem is someone eating a Big Mac, then it's not about fat people eating Big Macs. It's about people eating Big Macs, regardless of size.
Or when we talk about health, let's talk about all of the issues about health, not just weight. So weight, yes, I think most people would agree it's a part of it, but is it all of it? No.
Yeah.
No. So let's talk about the whole conversation rather than just one aspect of it.
Well, listen, Hannah, we're out of time, but thank you so much for coming on the show to share with me your perspective and kind of how you experienced the 2020 episode. And I look forward to watching it tomorrow, Thursday night, 9:30 on TV2.
Yeah. Now, before you go, Kat, I want to do a big thank you to you. I mean, I think you're incredibly brave putting yourself out there. I think that about most of the talent that we talk to, because it is such a huge thing to let three people who we are, a producer, a journalist and a cameraman, into your life and show us a side of yourself that, I mean, I know you're really comfortable talking about the academic side of it, but, you know, for you to talk about the personal side of it as well is incredibly brave. And for 2020, we require that because we want people to care about you as a person and therefore understand a little bit more about where you come from. But, you know, lots of people are going to struggle with the concept that you've put across, and some will, but, and you know, and you may get some, what you call the fat hate, you know, out of that. But I know that there's lots of people that will agree with what you're saying and will certainly take on board some of it. And I know that's the reason that you're doing this, because, you know, it's baby steps when you're talking about changing people's
changing the world, really. Excellent. All right, Hannah. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kat.
Cheers.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Friend of Maryland. Friend of Maryland airs weekly on Access Manitou 999 AM and is then podcast on iTunes. I hope you enjoyed this episode where we chatted about the experience of filming an episode on fat activism for 2020 in New Zealand. The episode will air tomorrow, Thursday, February 16th at 9:30 p.m. on TV2. I'll hopefully be able to post this part of the episode onto my Facebook page and onto YouTube to link to my Tumblr as well. I'm looking forward to experiencing the episode and interested about the kind of feedback that I'm going to receive. I promise you, I will be playing Fat Hate Bingo as I go along. So tune in and let me know what you think.